The University of Kansas Health System is proud to be the official healthcare provider of the Kansas City Current. From youth athletes to the pros, we put player care first to turn their dreams into reality. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/kccurrent.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday, Sports Radio 810 WHB in Kansas City, blasting 50,000 watts across the Midwest. Also, you can listen on the app, which you can download through 810WHB.com. Jed Marshall is behind the glass, co-hosting today. My name is Brad Porter. We're live in the Rally House studios. Talking a little Royals baseball this hour, not the big league club, because there's not much there as they lose again last night 6-4 to finish off the worst month of June in franchise history at 5-21. So I think our next guest here is probably going to be the most popular guy to follow on Twitter and at Baseball Prospectus BP Kansas City. He's going to be the most popular guy for the next rest of the season, because we need to find out who the young guys are and who's coming up through the system and who's performing well and who may be disappointing. Clint Scholes from BP Kansas City joins us now. Clint, how are you on this Sunday morning?
Doing well. Can't complain.
Fantastic. Well, we're not sure if it's going to rain more or not. It's kind of a cloudy day, but had that rain this morning. All right, first things first, we'll start out with a downer note, and then we'll bring it up a little bit. Very frightening pictures last night from AA Northwest Arkansas. Khalil Lee, who a lot of people in Kansas City are really waiting to get here to Kansas City. I know Stephen St. John is a huge fan of Khalil Lee, but he was hit in the head by a pitch last night, and he was down on the ground for what I would say were several minutes and had to leave the game. Was there any update from Northwest Arkansas about Khalil Lee and his condition today or last night?
I haven't got any kind of update yet on him, on his status. I guess the small bright spot is that he walked off. So hopefully everything's okay. We'll just have to hear on that end, you know, today and tomorrow, and I'll be updating Twitter and trying to get back from Northwest Arkansas guys what the status is. But I haven't heard anything as of yet.
Yeah, I saw the pictures that were put on Twitter last night of, and I think there was a small video clip, and it's just, boy, you just hate for that to happen to anybody, whether you like him or not, and just, man, hope everything's all right, and it's just something minor, maybe he was scared, I'm not sure, but hate to see that happen.
Definitely.
We'll bring it up with some good notes here. Nicky Lopez, another guy that Royals fans are certainly high on, and an exciting young talent, gets promoted to Omaha. His first game Friday night, 4-for-5, and I believe it's a home run, a couple of stolen bases. Man, what a way to announce yourself at AAA and to your teammates that what kind of a player and what kind of a talent you have.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really draw that up any better. He had his press conference before the game as a local Creighton guy. That, you know, normally that doesn't happen for players when they get promoted. They don't have press conferences. And then he goes out, has a double, a home run, two additional hits, steals a base, plays his usual excellent defense. You couldn't really draw it up any better in front of the home crowd. Tons of interviews after the game, and just about as celebrated a promotion as you'll ever get for a minor league guy. And everything Nicky does has been just outstanding to date. He's everything an organization would really want in a player, as far as in his talent and in his attitude and what he brings to a team.
And for Nicky Lopez, I know this may sound a little bit silly, that I hope he comes up by September to get some time here. And one of the reasons is Nicky Lopez is 23 years old. And we've got guys getting their call-ups now in the majors more and more at 20. I've seen a 19-year-old, 21, 22, 23, and he'll be turning 24 next year. I think it's time to play. Get a few weeks in Omaha and then get up here and see what how you handle yourself against major league pitching.
I don't disagree, but college guys, it's a little different path. So he is a little bit older, but he has moved through the system extremely fast. So as far as his pace and what he's doing is fine. You want to see how he's going to excel at the AAA level. It is, every level is a little bit different. AAA pitchers, while they might not have the elite velocity of a major league pitcher, most of them can handle, you know, work breaking balls very well. And they know how to sequence pretty well, especially the guys who maybe don't have the upper level of velocity, and that's the only reason that keeping them down. So seeing how he adjusts at that level is the biggest thing. He doesn't need to go on the 40 this year after winter, and so that you have to take that into account also.
Okay.
As far as adding a player to the 40, and who by doing that, who are you losing or have an inability to add in the winter? So any kind of roster crunch, you got to take that into consideration. I don't think you'll see him added this year, but I think over the winter, after the moves are made, and maybe early out of spring, depending on how he adjusts to spring training at the major league level, you'll see that if he can play and he's ready, the Royals don't usually mess with service time and holding players back. If he's able to go out of spring, then and he's the best option, then I would say they look into it. If not, then he'll probably have to wait until a good time to call him up.
See, this is why I like having you on the show, because what happens is the fan in me says, 23 years old, get him up here now. And the realistic side is, you know, he did go to college. It's not like he's had a lot of minor league experience and the service time. So I my excitement gets ahead of myself, but you are the voice of reason. I appreciate it. We had another good outing last night, and I've started to scan further down the system, and I'm, you know, following you on Twitter, finding out more and more about players that I don't know a lot about. And we had a kid in Burlington last night get his first start there, Marcelo Martinez. And I'll admit, I didn't know a lot about him. I know the Royals signed him out of the Mexican League. He's 21 years old. He's 6'2", 190 pounds, so there's opportunity to put weight on. He's a left-hander. And he goes out in his debut for Burlington after getting promoted from Idaho Falls and goes 5 innings, 12 strikeouts, and no walks. As you've talked to guys who either cover Idaho Falls or Burlington, what is kind of the early feedback on what his strengths are?
You know, I was just talking to J.J. Piccolo about, I'd say 2 or 3 weeks ago, about different guys that are in Arizona or at the other levels and who they're impressed by. And his name was one of the names that popped up. He's a guy, you'll see a lot of times with Mexican League pitchers, because they pitch against extremely older competition. So you'll see a kid who's 16, 17 years old, and he's got to pitch against guys who are in their 30s, mid-30s, or accomplished hitters that are now at that level, back and just kind of playing along. And so that you'll see in those type of pitchers that they know sequencing very well. They're above their age level. And so when you see Martinez at the rookie level and what he's done so far, 22 strikeouts and 11 innings, I think only 4 hits allowed, 2 earned runs between the two levels. He's just an advanced pitcher, and so he's gonna dominate these lower levels. I think rookie ball, single A, if he would pitch there this year, I think he's gonna do very well at any level. And then when you get to Carolina League and an upper level, then you'll start to see what kind of pitcher he is at that point. He does have good stuff. He's low 90s as far as velocity goes, and then good breaking stuff. Like I said, he knows how to sequence pitches, so he's an advanced pitcher in that state, and so he's definitely one to watch as we get to the upper levels and see, hey, now is he reaching his ceiling as far as peak velocity? I mean, because you're talking low 90s lefty, that's usually enough, but that's where you'll see if he peaks out or not, I think, when you get to the upper level. So he's definitely one to get excited about as he's dominating here lower, but I think it's more he's above, intelligence-wise, he's above the guys that he's playing right now.
We're talking with Clint Scholes from BP Kansas City Baseball Prospectus. Does a great job of covering the Royals prospects and the players coming through the system and how they're performing. Clint, you said you talked with J.J. Piccolo, and he brought up Marcelo Martinez. Is this a guy, and again, I'm going to get ahead of myself here, but is this a guy who could play into that thought of the possible rebuild and competing again in 2021 or 2022? Could Marcelo Martinez be on a path to do that quick, or are we still way far away on that?
No, I think it's a guy just like all these other college pitchers that you monitor and you see who's coming along and who's performing and how their stuff's changing along the lines. I mean, where a pitcher is at 21, obviously, a lot of times isn't where they're going to be at 23, 24. They're going to adjust their breaking stuff. Maybe they add a pitch, subtract a pitch, adjust a pitch. So he's definitely somebody to watch in that mix with all these college draftees that they just added. So, you know, he doesn't have the velocity that the guys like Kowar or Singer have. I mean, where they're throwing in the mid-90s or in Kowar's case, upper 90s. But still, as a crafty lefty with intelligence, maybe he's a number three or back-end starter that adds a lot of value, especially in their rookie contract.
We're talking with Clint Scholes from BP Kansas City about the Royals' top prospects. You mentioned the two kids from Florida out of the draft. We both did very well in the College World Series, and Florida unfortunately got knocked out before they could get to the final set. But with Singer and Kowar, I believe you retweeted out an article yesterday or the day before about somebody from somebody who covers Florida baseball and how much great pitching they've produced over the years. But it's possible that Singer and Kowar might be two of the best ever coming to the Royals.
Yeah, I think so. I think Brady definitely has as celebrated career as any Florida pitcher that's ever been through their organization or through their school. And as far as being Baseball America Pitcher of the Year, you know, being on the All College World Series team last year, being a second round pick out of high school, being a Cape Cod Player of the Year according to Perfect Game when he was there. I mean, he's checked every box along the way. And I actually think Jackson's the more talented of the two. So definitely as far as Florida goes, it's two of the better pitchers that they've seen come through their system. And which that's totally saying something. You get A.J. Puck was, I think, the number six pick a couple of years ago. And they've had multiple other number one picks and other draftees this year, and they've got guys behind them. They're loaded, and O'Sullivan definitely knows how to recruit and recruit pitching down there.
We're talking with Clint Scholes from BP Kansas City. He follows all of the top Royals prospects. Another kid we talk about a lot is MJ Melendez, and I butchered his name more than once, but how has MJ been doing over the last couple of weeks?
Nothing to complain about. It as you get into these July, August, that's where I think if you're going to see his stats really dip, just for a young catcher, as it gets in the hotter part of the year, they haven't played this many games, even though high school and summer league teams, they play a lot of games nowadays compared to what they used to. But as you get into the longer summer months that he's never seen before, I think if you're going to see any kind of dip, that's where you'll see it. Right now, he's still around 260. Hit his 12th home run the other day, so he's just coming along, playing well. You know, as good as a catching output offensively as we've seen in quite a while, especially in this organization.
The other player we talk about a lot is Sully Matias. He's put up huge numbers, 24 home runs so far this season, but of course, he strikes out a lot, 94 strikeouts versus just 20 walks. Has he made any improvements in that territory, or is this a season where they just tell the kids, swing for the fences, and we'll work on stuff as we go?
He's taking more pitches. You still see him be aggressive. Last night he came off the bench in a pinch-hit roll with one on. He probably could have taken a walk on a 3-2 pitch that was a little bit close on the inside, but of course, he's a young guy, and he was aiming for the fences and swung over it. So you're seeing him walk slightly more as of late, and he's definitely working more counts. And it's going to be a growing curve. He's still hitting for power, though. That's what you like. Still at 24 home runs, leading the minor leagues. So any time with a guy his age and his talent level I think you're getting a lot of push from, at least I do, on from fans that, hey, this guy needs to be promoted. And why aren't we moving him up? And the reality is, just like you're saying, he's got things to work on at that level. I mean, if he was dominating where he's hitting every third ball out and they were walking him intentionally all the time, well, then you would maybe think about promoting him. But there's stuff that he definitely needs to work on, making contact more consistently, maybe laying off pitches that are something he can't do with. And that's why they're at those levels and taking that time to learn. And Philly just still has that, even though he does put up good numbers.
Clint, I appreciate your time. You do a great job getting stuff on Twitter for all the folks to read and so we can find out about these guys. And it's really awesome. And I think the second half of the season, you're going to be getting a lot more phone calls and people following you to find out what's coming, because it's going to get thin up here at the big league level over the next few weeks.
Well, hang in there. That's all I can say. And maybe start looking at the draft info.
Absolutely. Clint, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.
You too. Thank you.
All right. That is Clint Scholes from BP Kansas City Baseball Perspectives. Follow him on Twitter at Clint Scholes, S-C-O-L-E-S. Just to kind of hit on a couple of things there. And, Jed, I don't know if you're like me. The way I'm kind of looking at it is, like last night's Royals game, I watched till about the seventh or eighth inning, but there are nights when I may not watch more than a couple innings. But I'm getting to the point, I'm now to the point where all I want to talk about is these kids coming up. Single A, double A, triple A. Nicky Lopez going 4-for-5 at Omaha in his debut the other night. And I kind of feel like that's how the second half of the season is going to go. There's not going to be a lot to talk about at the big league level, especially if you trade away Mike Moustakas or you trade away Whit Merrifield. You trade away a couple of other guys. There's going to be not much here to talk about. I mean, there's not much anyway. But would you be more inclined to study the minor leaguers a little bit more, like me?
I am already, but it is getting to a point where we were talking about this yesterday. I don't think we're necessarily in the oasis of 30 years without any hope of seeing a playoff. I do think that, I don't know, it's a different time. And Royals fans, I think actually the ones I talk to and who understand the game still keep their eye on the game.
Yeah.
I'm a lot like you. I'll watch the Royals game. I certainly keep track on my phone and God bless the Fox Sports app, but I'm not hanging on every pitch like I used to be. To me, there are still things that you can keep an eye on the major league level and be excited about. Brad Keller being one. Danny Duffy's been trending better.
Like, the Herrera kid that just came up has been...
Yeah, Rosel Herrera, the next Willie Mays, according to some. I can't wait for his bust in Cooperstown, but that's a topic for a different day. But yeah, I mean, there are certain things you can keep an eye on, obviously the trades, but yeah, I mean, at this point, it's all minor leaguers. What's frustrating is that they're a couple of years away, it sounds
right.
Like.
Well, isn't Brad Keller's like the same age as the Florida kids they just drafted, right?
Yeah, he's 22.
So, man, alive.
And Coar and Singer... The advantage, it sounds like, from drafting guys in college is that they're going to be quicker to the majors and stuff like that. The worry with them, obviously, is that they have a lot of innings on their arm and a lot of pitches. It didn't seem like the head coach at Florida there really cared how many pitches he threw those guys out there for. But, you know, they performed and did well. It's ultimately his job to win. So,
right. College coaches have one job, win ball games. And if it takes 140, 150 pitches, 160, if you have to come back and pitch after a two-hour rain delay, and these guys aren't Wade Davis, but they had a guy do it in the College World Series this year. But I was a little bit surprised, too, that Clint, when we were talking about the Florida kids, he said that he thought Coar is better than Singer. And I don't know if they lined up the picks that way based on slotting and money, because there's a lot of that slotting game that goes on in the draft. Well, should have been a 15th overall pick, but we got him at 27. But he's going to get top 10 money. And it's weird how they shuffle the money around like that.
Well, and think how the Royals used that to their advantage.
Absolutely, they have.
When they made their initial run, drafting Will Myers in the fourth. I think Manaea was... like a third round pick, or no, he went in the sandwich round because of his rotator cuff or whatever.
But, I think it was a hip injury.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. It all kind of blends together. But certainly there's a lot of that that goes into it. You and I not being Dayton Moore and following the ins and outs of everything that's going on with high school and college baseball players don't necessarily have that advantage. But yeah, there's certainly a lot of that that goes into it.
Absolutely. Well, I'll be interested. So again, follow Clint Scholes at Clint Scholes, and that's S-C-O-L-E-S. Covers Royals prospects for BP Kansas City Baseball Prospectus. We'll take a quick timeout. Remember, coming up at 11 o'clock, Ben Kirchival from CBSSports.com is going to join us and talk college football as we get through this slog of a summer with anticipation for the college football season. It seems like it's not going to get here, but we'll do that with Ben Kirchival at 11 o'clock. We'll take a quick timeout here. You're listening to Sports Sunday. Jed Marshall is here. My name is Brad Porter. We're live in the Rally House Studios. Back right after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back to Sports Sunday. A little overcast across Kansas City and the Midwest. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jed Marshall is running the show. My name is Brad Porter. We're live in the Rally House Studios. Again, coming up at 11 o'clock, Ben Kirchival, CBSSports.com, will join us and talk college football. At the beginning of the show, I accidentally called him Ken Kirchival, who is a great actor who spent many years on the TV show Dallas, which I watched when I was a kid.
Was Dallas the one with JR?
Yes. Okay. JR and Bobby and Pam and Sue Ellen and, yeah.
Sure. A little, well, I think I was alive during it, but I don't remember watching it.
Yeah, I watched it. I think it was that, and then I think Falcon Crest was after that. Lorenzo Lamas was on Falcon Crest.
Lorenzo Lamas. He was in some quality programming.
Yes, he has been. Does he still do stuff? Is he still acting? I guess I could Google that if I wanted to.
I mean, define acting. There are plenty of people who do many different acting in a lot of different capacity. Like, for instance, when Josh and Rudy went to cover the Frank Mason Celebrity Softball Tournament.
Oh, boy.
And they had the Home Run Derby. One of the guys who came back was Jahidi White. He's from St. Louis.
I know, yeah.
Sure. And
went to Georgetown.
Yeah, he went to Georgetown. I guess he got a little bit of time in the league with the Phoenix Suns, and Rudy was reading his Wikipedia page on the air. It mentioned how he was an actor, and he had been in Alien versus Alien or something on the Sci-Fi Network. He didn't have a speaking role, and he was a played an alien because he's just a huge, guy.
He's a big kid, yeah.
So, is he an actor? Is he still pursuing an acting career?
If you're paid for performing, stage or screen, you're an actor.
That's, I guess, what I mean. If Lorenzo Lamas is doing stuff like that, maybe he is still an actor.
I was flipping around the other day. There was some, I stopped on the Hallmark Channel for something. Maybe it was like an old Frasier rerun. And they ran a promo for, coming up, a Hallmark special. As we bring back, I don't know, make up a name, Sally Jefferson. And it was made like, they made it like it was a big deal. I'm like, okay, I've never heard of Sally Jefferson. So how about that little tune? We just went off of Lorenzo Lamas, Dallas. Big Dallas fan.
It's because Rudy walked in. Wow. He works with Josh a lot. It's all connected.
It's all connected.
The energy that comes with the weirdness of Josh Briscoe is always connected to the people who hang with him the most.
Right.
And Rudy just coming down the hallway, and here we go, talking about Lorenzo Lamas and Dallas and all this other crap.
Yeah. I saw a tweet go out last night, and maybe Josh Briscoe responded to it. Is there ever been a TV show that ended well, like had a great finale? And it listed off all these shows, like The Sopranos and Seinfeld and all these shows that had horrible finales. I'll never forgive Seinfeld for doing that hot garbage for a finale. And Sopranos, I didn't like it.
So, I didn't watch The Sopranos religiously enough. I heard enough about the finale that I feel like I saw it.
And
the Seinfeld ending, I don't think is nearly as bad as people make it out to be.
No, it's horrific.
No, it wasn't.
I thought it was
horrific. It wasn't nearly as bad as you make it out to be.
I think it was, okay, let's bring back all your favorite characters for the last 15 years, and that's what it was. And it was boring. They were on trial for not being nice to somebody.
I mean the actual ending of the finale.
Oh, were they all in jail?
Yeah, they recall the joke from the very first episode, the very beginning of the show.
And they're talking about the buttons not lining up right or whatever.
It's the very first joke in the very
first
episode.
Well, I know that's what it is. I just, for the
that's gold,
the show,
Jerry,
though.
Gold.
Kenny Banya made a return in the finale. But anyway, it was about how bad finales are. And being a Dallas fan, they killed off Bobby Ewing one year. I think he died in a parachute accident or something. I'm not sure. And then eventually one day, Bobby's wife, widow, Pam, was in bed, and he comes walking out of the shower. It was all a dream. Bobby dying was a dream. So for like a whole, like everything you watched for that year was a waste of time because none of it really mattered. None of it happened. I was invested in it. When you invest in a show, you don't want to get shortchanged like that.
Isn't that how people who watched Lost feel?
Probably. I didn't watch Lost, but I know there was a lot of lashing out over that finale.
The other show that I lobbed that had a good finale was The Wire.
Oh, right. How did that end?
No, don't spoil it for people who haven't seen it.
Oh, please. You've had years and millions of recommendations.
Rudy's right there, and he is, because he's OCD, I hope he doesn't mind me saying that. I know, he's never seen it.
Rudy, though?
At some point.
Okay, at some point. Okay.
He's going alphabetically through the HBO shows, so he does have a ways. I think he said he was on G or something. Yeah. The point is, they always do the montage scenes, and I mean, you just see how they basically told 5 years worth of this great unwinding story, and you see that all of these people who transformed and changed in so many ways, the city just continues it all. It's a cycle.
Right.
It doesn't
end.
Yeah.
Everything they did to fight drugs and crimes and gangs,
it's all for naught.
It wasn't going to matter.
And all the people who reform and change and do all this good, there's another person who's there are 10 more people taking their place, you know, becoming drug addicts and stuff like that. A very powerful show.
Yeah. I'll tell you a show that ended well, and it probably didn't get a lot of broad audience, but The Shield on FX with Michael Chiklis.
That show was a Wire knockoff.
I thought it was a great show. And the actors who have come out of that show have all gone on to do better things. The guy in Vice Principals, he was one of the detective drug squad guys, but these guys fight drugs and crime, but then they get into it and they start becoming that, and they become killers, and they're very bad people. And then it ends with Michael Chiklis sitting in a cubicle having to put his suit back on and having to work meaningless penny any crime cases, and so it kind of crumbles on him. His whole career crumbles on him. Anyway, how about the NBA free agency?
I was finding...
You like this?
Yeah, I'm having a good time. No,
what other show ended well?
I don't know. Tweet at us, at JetRow24 or at Brad K. Porter. We can actually start talking sports. I know that people tune in for allegedly sports
talk. You can have fun. That's why I like listening to Josh Briscoe.
Apparently,
he has fun.
You can't, Brad, because everybody loves talking about this Royals team that is, you know, 700 games under 500 and going nowhere. Like, we literally were trying to find positive things on the club. Yeah. I lobbed out Brad Keller. You had, and Danny Duffy, and you said Rozel Herrera. Yeah. Like, literally, if we're at a point
where we're
Rozel Herrera, and he's a fine player, and I don't mean to take shots, but really, if we're at a maybe his family's here. Who knows? The point is that if we're like Rozel Herrera, who knows? Maybe.
Right.
Let's pump the brakes on the sports talk. It's kind of a dull thing. Sporting played a turd of a game. There's not a lot. We don't have an NBA team. I love the NBA. We can talk that. Let's go for it.
You know, I did hear a discussion. I think Seren had it on this week. If you couldn't tell, I listen to Seren a lot. And I listen to the Border Patrol in the morning because I'm up early. But they were having a discussion about the NBA coming to Kansas City. And the first two hurdles that have been thrown up are the column that Sam Mellinger wrote when he talked to Cliff Illig about it. Cliff Illig, the primary owner of Sporting KC, he along with Neil Patterson bought the team together and their ownership group, Rob Heineman and all those people. And Cliff Illig mentioned all the financial obstacles of one, owning a team, having enough money just to buy a team, and then to operate a team. Operating an NBA franchise is very expensive. Could there be the revenue streams in Kansas City to support that? Because the first thing you got to do, if you want to buy an NBA team, if you go and buy what Steve Ballmer played for the Clippers, that's $2 billion. Now, maybe for a Kansas City franchise, if you had an expansion franchise, it wouldn't be $2 billion. But you got to find $1.5 billion just to get through the door, just to start the paperwork. That's hurdle number one. And Cliff Illig is a very smart businessman. He can run the financials day and night and tell you it is going to work or it's not going to work. Or do we need partners? How many partners? So that's roadblock number one. And Mayor Sly James came out, and again, this was what Saran was talking about the other day. Mayor Sly James came out and said, well, we don't want to lose all those dates at Sprint Center. Sprint Center is one of the busiest venues, not only in the United States, but around the world. The number of concerts, the number of shows, the number of tickets they sell. It's one of the best in the world. You go to those top 10 rankings in the, like those, what do you call them? Not corporate magazines, but industry magazines. They're always ranked up there. Run well, and they bring in a great list of concerts because they're dialed in with AEG to bring in the top acts. So the NBA would be, those are two hurdles already. Yeah, how many billionaires you have walking around? You got the Kemper family? Are they?
I think they're more concerned about the arts,
yes,
which I appreciate.
And the Kaufmans.
And I think they're also more, mm-hmm, they obviously have an interest in sports,
right,
since they put a baseball team here. But again, at this point, I think more interested in the arts.
Right. So you'd have to go outside of Kansas City and find that investor who is fine not living here, but owning a team here. Or they could move here. I don't know.
Kansas City's lovely. If you're a billionaire, maybe having a home here would be
nice.
Goes
a long way.
But, again, I don't.
You could still have your beach house and your,
sure,
place in the mountains.
And, I think it'd be more likely that it'd be someone whose roots were in Kansas City and then they moved away.
Right.
And whatever.
Right.
Came back and wanted to. They were huge Kings fans, and they want to bring the NBA back
all
to
right.
Kansas City.
I'm down with that.
I'll Google search real
right.
quick.
Well, what happens when you get an outside investor who does not have any ties to Kansas City and that you don't know very well is what could happen over the years with trying to bring hockey, the NHL, back to Kansas City. Because they had an investor lined up, Boots Del Baggio. I think his nickname was because he worked in a vineyard when he was a kid, so he always wore boots. I don't know. But he was going to buy the Nashville Predators, bring him to Kansas City. Boots Del Baggio. He had this big personality, and this guy's a card, man. That turns out he was on his way to prison. I believe he had committed some very serious financial crimes. May not have been honest about his personal net worth. So that can happen. That happens. But on the NBA free agency front, it was interesting last night because depending on if you're an insomniac or not, sometimes I have trouble getting to sleep. I should probably put the phone down, but if I can't sleep and there's nothing on, like I try to put on something late at night, something boring, I'll pick up Twitter. Geez, what's going on? Well, I'm going to mispronounce his name. Gene Wojnarowski from ESPN.
Adrian
Wojnarowski from ESPN, who beats everybody on every scoop.
Not anymore.
Not
He's
anymore.
Beefing.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's he beefing with?
Oh.
We had to find out.
Rudy.
First of all, we got to find out who Adrian Wojnarowski is beefing with.
I think Rudy's
on Twitter.
Rudy's recording something.
Okay.
Oh, his name's, Smosh, something. I can't. I'll look it up real quick.
Okay. Well, he starts tweeting out at 10, 11 o'clock last night, Central Time, about what he's hearing, and then what's going to happen at 12:01 a.m., and then the rumors got out that, not rumors, the story got out that Russell Westbrook was having a huge party for him and his friends and that Paul George was at the party. And then they started going up to the microphone saying at 12:01 a.m., Paul George will have a big announcement. This wild party, Russell Westbrook.
Shams is this guy's name.
I don't know.
I don't either. Rudy was telling me about him. Apparently, he's huge in NBA nerd circles, so I'm surprised I don't know him. But he's an NBA guy. They used to work together at Yahoo. I don't know if they're beefing, but it's certainly a fierce competition about who has the most up-to-date information.
Because I remember last summer, and then at the trade deadline, there was like a website or a Twitter account that was tracking like the top three or four NBA newsbreakers and then marking the time as to who was first. And Wojnowski ends up being first a lot. So, of course, you had to follow him late into the night. And then Paul George gets on stage at Russell Westbrook's party down at wherever they were and says, yeah, I'm done. I'm signed. Paul George, $137 million for 4 seasons. Chris Paul goes back to Houston, $160 million for 4 seasons. DeAndre Jordan leaves the Clippers, goes to the Mavericks, 1 year, $24.1 million. Durant did the it's the one plus one deal, I think they call it now. So Durant is getting $30 million for next year and $31.5 for the option year. And then nobody knows what LeBron is going to do, but he took a trip to Los Angeles. And now the next rumor that's out is that the Lakers are interested in Boogie Cousins. Would LeBron want to deal with DeMarcus Cousins and all the things that DeMarcus brings? DeMarcus is a terrific player, but he does a lot of dumb things on the court.
He's also insane. Yeah, LeBron just finished up his time playing with J.R. Smith, who, again, crazy person. I don't know. You can make an argument that he cost him a championship. Who knows? If game one goes differently, maybe the whole series changes. Right. I don't necessarily buy into that.
No.
But DeMarcus Cousins is wacko and gets more technical fouls than anybody. So I don't necessarily, he is a great basketball player, but I don't see LeBron being like, yeah, let's do it.
He gets in trouble
like Draymond Green.
More than Rasheed Wallace used to.
Yeah. Rasheed Wallace was great. Ben Kercheval, his Twitter handle says that Rasheed Wallace is his biological father. You'll appreciate that.
Okay. So that's the big deal. I know a couple of days ago, I saw a breaking story. Sources say Steve Kerr could ink contract extension with the Warriors. No duh. Let's not put the words breaking in front of something that's virtually a foregone conclusion. I get sick of the word breaking. Whether it's sports news, cable news, the word breaking is so overused. So overused. Here's some breaking news. I need to take a quick time out. Come back for one more segment this hour, and then as Jed mentioned, Ben Kercheval from CBSSports.com is going to join us. We'll talk college football. And then at 11:30-ish, I think Jed Marshall is going to come in with some Jedlines, which is a collection of, some of them are sports stories, some are random news events that he picks out. Yesterday we had a great one about a congressman who had to pay back the taxpayers because he spent money on certain products for his women staffers in his office, which was strange, but we went down that rabbit hole. So we'll do that right around 11:30. Quick time out here. You're listening to Sports Sunday. Jed Marshall is here. My name is Brad Porter. We're live in the Riley House studios. You're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Oh, boy. Things are getting exciting in the World Cup. Apostrophe C-I-T-I-N-G. Citing instead of exciting. It's just citing. Spain and Russia still tied 1-1. We're at 91 minutes and 37 seconds, and it's 4 minutes of added time. So about 2 minutes and 15 seconds here, and they're going to PKs. Knockout.
Won't they go an additional 15 and 15?
Come on, I want PKs. They're going to go to PKs.
Not the soccer aficionado you present yourself as.
1-1. I would... Russia played just well enough in the group stage where you wouldn't be totally shocked that they could play 90 minutes with Spain, but I'm still
They're on
surprised.
Steroids. It's fine.
Well, that's what happens. That'll happen. I did get...
The World Cup is rigged for them to win, Brad. We went over this earlier.
Well, it's the Olympics and the World Cup and the name of competition they haven't cheated in. They've cheated in all of them.
Yeah, exactly. So why wouldn't they cheat on this?
Their best...
It's in their country.
Their best chess player is Garry Kasparov, and they've almost tried to take him out a few times because he speaks out against the government.
Really?
I follow the chess game pretty close here, Jed.
Do you?
Yeah, I haven't brought it up on the show. I don't like to show off.
I'm not sure if you're joking.
No, I don't follow the chess game, but Garry Kasparov has spoken out against the government, and he finds himself frightened at times.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. No. When you started talking chess, because I actually do like playing chess.
Oh, I like it, yeah. I like playing with my kids. Yeah. I did get a response on Twitter. People were suggesting great finales to TV shows. Dial it up here real quick. Somebody goes by the Twitter handle, @TVGuide19, so it must be a TV fan. His two suggestions were Burn Notice and Love Island UK. Now, I don't know anything about Love Island UK. I don't know what that is. But Burn Notice, very underrated show, and not very many people watched it. I get it. But it was one of those shows that I didn't watch when it started, but then when they would show like 15 episodes a day on, I don't know what channel it was on, TBS or whatever, I would get back into it. That was a great finale.
Was Burn Notice the show with Mark Paul Gosselaar?
No. Burn Notice, their
it
stars...
It sounds bad.
Jeffrey Donovan was the star of that show. In fact, I think Jeffrey Donovan was in the Fargo show on FX, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm. How do you like that?
He doesn't do a lot of TV shows and movies because he, frankly, he's one of those people that he acts because he's good at it, but not because he wants to be a star. He hates like being a star.
Hmm.
So Burn Notice was a good show. That ended well.
I've never even heard of it, so you shouldn't.
It was a very niche show. The people who watched it were very loyal to it, and if you didn't, so a lot of people just didn't tune in the first season and they never went to it. So, not that they didn't spend a lot of money on promoting it because the commercials were on all the time. There, his girlfriend on the show, not in real life, but on the show, Fiona, real name is Gabrielle Anwar. Yes. 10 out of 10 on that one. So, we have now finished regulation between Russia and Spain, tied 1-1. Russian oligarchs are gathering now to see how to engineer the final stages of the match. How should this unfold? And I'm sorry, I was just reading up over here. Yeah. They played 95 minutes. Couldn't settle it, so I have to keep playing. This would be, well, the knockout stages you don't have, or the group play, you don't have any PKs or anything like that. The knockout stages you do. I'd love, wouldn't you like to see go down to PKs here?
No, because I'm not foolish and didn't forget that they go to extra time after full time's completed, that they have the 15 and then 15. I like it. It's not golden goal though, is it?
No, you play the full.
Yeah, that's what
the
I thought.
2:15. I hate golden goal.
I like golden goal.
Do you?
Yeah.
It makes you. It forces you to get off your ass and play.
Agreed.
There's no laying back. The first 15 minutes, lay back.
I was gonna say everybody bunkers in the first.
Yes.
The first 15 minutes, and then they kind of open it up in the second 15 and start putting men forward. But in golden goal, you have to go forward.
Right.
I don't know. It's just a better way. It makes soccer way more exciting. And if golden goal doesn't happen, then you go to PKs. Either way, it's a brilliant, exciting form of soccer.
Right. The best game that came down to PKs I ever saw, and I'm biased, was the Sporting KC MLS Cup game at Sporting Park.
I was back here.
Huh?
I was back here,
well,
so it lost some of its dramatics.
I was at the stadium, and the commissioner, Don Garber, was there, and he went out on the field to get ready for the trophy presentation before they got to overtime, right? And remember, it was like 7 degrees that day with a wind chill probably of minus 10. And so when they headed to overtime, Don Garber, the commissioner, came back underneath the stadium. He was not wearing a stocking cap. He was wearing this little, I don't know what it was, this tiny little hat, because he was afraid to wear a stocking cap. And he was frozen solid. All of us who were there were frozen solid. It was ridiculously cold. But the PKs, holy smokes. One of the most entertaining things you see. And I know the people who bag on soccer always say, well, why do you have ties in soccer? Well, you don't when you get to knockout games, and it gets pretty exciting. So if you don't like ties, fine, skip pool play. Now the knockout rounds are on. Give it a try. Russia, Spain, tied after 90. Got to keep playing. We'll take a quick timeout. We're going to keep playing. We're going to bring in Ben Kercheval from CBSSports.com in the next hour and talk a little college football. Can't wait for it to start. And then Jed Marshall has got his Jed lines for the day. Some might be sports. Some might be crazy stuff outside of sports. And we'll just throw them out and get some opinions on that. We'll take a quick time out. You're listening to Sports Sunday. Jed Marshall is here. My name is Brad Porter, live in the Rally House Studios. And you're listening to Sports Radio 810 WHB.
This is Sports Sunday with Brad Porter on Sports Radio 810 WHB.